Welcome back to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. 11,000 rape kits discovered abandoned in a Detroit police warehouse. That was 5 years ago. The discovery sparked outrage. But since that time, only about 2,000 of these kits have undergone DNA testing. Rebecca Campbell is a professor of community psychology and program evaluation at Michigan State University. She was brought on board by the National Institute of Justice to evaluate how those Detroit rape kits were handled. Welcome, Rebecca.
Thank you very much.
Can you give us a refresher? Take us back to what it was that caused those rape kits to wind up abandoned in a Detroit police warehouse.
This is a problem 30 years in the making. These kits go way back, 10 years ago. 20 years ago, 30 years ago. So we really have to take a long-term perspective to understand how and why Detroit has so many untested sexual assault kits. Mm-hmm. Certainly part of the problem had to do with the resources available in the Detroit Police Department, Detroit Crime Lab, lots of other organizations in the Detroit community over time. As we all know, Detroit is a community that has been struggling financially for so many years to be able to serve its population, to serve the people of this city. And for a long period of time, the agencies that were tasked with helping rape victims really were under-resourced in being able to do this. So, for example, the Detroit Crime Lab had two DNA scientists. Two. Now, if that sounds like not very much, you're right. It's not very much.
Right.
When we look comparatively at other cities that have had similar crime rates, similar populations over a similar period of time, it wouldn't be atypical that they had 6, 8, 14 DNA scientists. Detroit had two. Mm. Another way to put it in perspective is the city of Dallas, for example. Very similar in crime rate. Population at the time was very similar. They had two laboratories. Detroit had two people.
And one overworked laboratory.
Exactly. So from just a capacity perspective, it would have been extremely difficult for the Detroit laboratory to keep up with the supply, to keep up with what the crime rate was in Detroit and to test all of those kits. Similarly, the Detroit Police Department Sex Crimes Unit went through not one, but two major staffing cuts, two 50% cuts in their staffing levels over this period of time. So their capacity to be able to keep up with victims of this crime and pursue these cases was very limited. There were other contextual factors in Detroit. The prosecutor's office has also faced staggering budget cuts over the course of time in being able to work with police to bring these cases forward and to bring them into trial. The community of Detroit did not have a sexual assault nurse examiner program until very recently, about 2006. And that's important because SANE programs, or SAFE programs as they're often called, are considered national best practice. And they've been around since the 1970s, 80s, and 90s. Detroit didn't get one until 2006. So having good quality rape exams and good quality evidence collection didn't even happen until very, very recently. So the idea that these kits might have contained useful information, nobody really knew because they weren't being collected with the best state-of-the-art practitioners and equipment.
So they get collected and just kind of put on a shelf.
Correct.
And when I hear you spell out how undercut the sex crimes unit was and that there were only two DNA scientists, realizing the sheer amount of sex crimes that you know were happening, what does that say to us about the way that these victims have been viewed?
As not a priority, and that's the key part of this, too. It's not just that the crime lab and the police department didn't have enough resources. What resources they had, they chose not to put into this issue, not to put into this crime. So it's both. It's not just that they were under-resourced, but also that institutionally, this has not been a priority crime historically for the Detroit Police Department. They did not put adequate resources to this, and it does not appear that they really invested substantial effort in trying to address the resource problems that they were having to address victims of this very, very heinous crime.
So there we have kits going back 30 years. So that means we have rapists strolling around free as birds, and we have victims who may never see justice.
Unfortunately, that is the situation. That is the situation that we know from other social science research that most rapists are serial rapists, particularly if they're not caught, if not apprehended. Mm-hmm. Because what they learn then is, oh, I can keep doing this, and I will keep doing this without consequence. So it becomes a major public safety issue. And for victims, it sends a very, very terrifying message of what happened to them doesn't matter, that they don't matter, that their health and well-being doesn't matter. And so that can be very, very troubling to survivors as they're trying to move forward with their recovery.
And we know some 2,000 of these kits are being tested now, Rebecca, but that's not all it takes to make justice happen. What happens after they get tested? We're looking at first money and time to do the DNA testing, and then what?
Yeah, testing is really the tip of the iceberg. There's been a lot of public attention to testing, which is absolutely critical, but it is just the first step in a very long process. The testing has to be done. That takes time. That takes money. And the time is important there because it needs to be done right. It has to go through scientific review. It has to be accurate. Very, very important. But then, what's next? Okay, so it's been tested. Did you get what's called a hit or a match out of CODIS, which is the federal DNA database? Does that give you information, for example, in a stranger rape, who the possible perpetrator is? Well, then the investigators need to find that person. And because these kits go back 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, this is not an easy task. We're not talking about a fresh crime scene. We're not talking about a fresh case. We're talking about going way back in time, potentially, to try to find the victim, to try to find the perpetrator, to try to find witnesses, to see was there any other crime scene evidence that was collected that's also sitting in property, waiting to be tested, waiting to be evaluated. So it takes quite a bit of time then to find all the pieces and parts and build an investigative case. Then it needs to move forward to the prosecutor's office where it needs to be evaluated, whether there'll be a warrant issued, and then it can start moving through the criminal justice system for prosecution, which can take anywhere from 9 months to 2 years, depending upon the complexity of the case at hand.
And meantime, we have heard nothing but problems from the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office in terms of budget and staffing because of the troubles, money troubles. Certainly Detroit police are not up to fighting form, and Michigan State Police, they're working some fierce overtime, aren't they?
They are. This community, all parts of this community, are incredibly overtaxed. The cuts that are happening to the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office, this could not come at a worse time. At a time where the volume of work to be done has skyrocketed through the discovery and testing of these kits, this is the time. This is now when they need the prosecutors because they have the will, they have the skills, they have the expertise. What's unique about the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office relative to other communities throughout the United States that have had problems with large numbers of untested kits is that this is a prosecutor, this is a community of prosecutors who really are invested in taking as many of these cases to trial as absolutely possible. They want to move forward on as many cases as they can as a public safety issue and for justice for victims. That has not been true in all jurisdictions that have had this kind of problem. For example, in Los Angeles, very few cases were ultimately prosecuted, even though they tested a whole bunch of them, because the prosecutors weren't on board. They are on board here in Detroit, and they need the resources to keep moving forward with these prosecutions and convictions.
Rebecca, as you were brought on board by the National Institute of Justice to evaluate just how these Detroit rape kits were handled, I sense a lot of passion in what you're saying. Is it the thought of the fact that each kit represents some woman who has not seen justice?
Each kit is a person. It's a woman, it's a man, it's a child, it's a boy, it's a girl, it's a story, it's a life. It's a life that was hurt, that was shattered, that may or may not ever be the same after that kit was taken. So there's a public safety issue, yes. There's a public justice issue, yes. There's also a human rights issue here of what do we owe these survivors, how do we make them whole, what can we be, as a society be doing to make them whole again.
And we know that the state legislature approved $4 million for helping to test the kits. That, I take it, is a drop in the bucket in terms of what's needed in terms of money and manpower.
That's correct. The money that was afforded by the Attorney General's Office and governors will fund the testing, But as we've talked about, mm-hmm. testing is the tip of the iceberg. There's the investigation, the victim notification, the prosecution, and the victim advocacy services. There's a lot more that needs to be done to move these cases forward through the criminal justice system.
Rebecca Campbell, Professor of Community Psychology and Program Evaluation at Michigan State University. It has been great to talk with you, and thank you so much for your insights, Rebecca.
You're very welcome. Thank you.